Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hey, that's me. And I'm sitting at the intersection where common sense and economic sense meet to make green sense. Bob Kessler, executive producer, will tell us more about who we're going to meet this week.
Art can really make an impact, especially when it comes to an issue that needs a lot of help. One is the issue of what's happening in our oceans, and there's a new art exhibit at Rice University called Not Correlated that's all about coral reefs. Earth Day is this weekend, the 49th annual, but also it's the first annual Drive Electric Earth Day. So we'll find out more about that.
All coming up on this edition of Green Sense. Visual art can often bring attention to causes to inspire action. Currently at the Moody Center for the Arts at Rice University, students are combating plastic waste by creating sculptures inspired by coral reefs. We're joined by Alex Rovner, a senior at Jones College, who created the piece called Not Correlated. Welcome to Green Sense.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Alex, tell us what went into the reef you've created.
Yeah, so we collected basically laboratory waste from all the science labs on campus, included pipette boxes and tips, lab gloves, any sort of plastic waste we could find, and tried to just incorporate it into a giant plastic reef.
And you collected all this from on campus, you said?
Yeah, so all the labs that we collected from were Rice University labs.
And what inspired you to make it into a reef?
So I worked with a PhD student, and both of us do research in a lab on campus that studies coral reef ecology. It's pioneered by Dr. Adrian Correa, and we're both just very interested in coral reefs and have seen the effects that plastic pollution can have on coral reefs and decided we could have an impact.
What are some of the effects that plastics have had on coral reefs?
So it can have a variety of effects. Anything from, you've seen all the pictures of sea turtles that have straws stuck in their noses. Anything from plastic bags that sea creatures can think are food or jellyfish, but even smaller things, when the plastic degrades, it creates micropollutants that can actually really create harmful chemicals to all sorts of marine life. So it doesn't just end with, the macro plastics, it really gets to the micro level too.
Are you seeing any direct cause and effect from these microplastics to the actual coral reef?
Yeah, so I can't quote. There's a lot of scientific research on it. I don't have any articles on me right now, but there are harmful effects on corals that have been documented.
How long did it take you, and how did you go about constructing this coral plastic coral reef?
So we started collecting materials probably around late September, early October of this past year. And we collected more or less through January. And then we continued to collect a little bit from then until about early March, but most of the material we collected through then. And then starting in late January, early February was when we started building.
And how did you come up with this clever name, Not Correlated?
It actually wasn't my name. It was the PhD student, Lauren Hauker, she was the one that came up with it. So I give all the credit to her.
Have you ever been to a coral reef?
Yeah, I have a couple, which I've been to some in the Florida Keys, some in Thailand, Bahamas. So I've been very fortunate. The coral reef that most of the research that's done in our lab is in Moorea, which is an island very close to Tahiti in the South Pacific.
Yeah, I've actually been to Moorea, beautiful area, and we do need to do a lot more to protect our coral reefs. When you visited coral reefs, could you see firsthand some of the destruction that man has caused?
Yeah, and it's actually funny because Lauren Howe Kerr, the PhD student I worked on the project with, isn't actually at Rice right now. She's in Moorea doing research. And the first day she was there, she was scuba diving just for fun, not collecting anything, just to get back in the way of, swimming through the water. And she showed pictures of corals that had bleached since the time that she had been there last. So it was very sad to see that the effects are already, you know, taking hold even in Moorea.
I've had the opportunity to swim in another number of coral reefs, especially down in Florida, and you could really see the impact from agricultural or pesticide runoff and just man-made activity. So it's sad, and it's great that we could raise awareness. Raising awareness is great, and art's a great way to do it, but how do you really get people to take action?
I think it's an interesting question because there's a ton of scientific research that goes on to study how we can mitigate the effects of, you know, coral bleaching and that sort of thing. But it's a conundrum because, you know, the scientific literature doesn't really necessarily reach the general public. It's kind of stuck behind these paywalls to get into these scientific journals, and it's not always the easiest to read. So I am a firm believer that, not necessarily art, but visual imagery and ways that can be connected to the public. I cite the sea turtle with the straw image and the polar bear on the ice caps. Like, those sort of images, I think, have a much stronger effect than a research paper that might show, you know, the same finding. It just doesn't have the same magnitude of effect on the general public.
How have people been reacting to seeing the not correlated exhibit?
From the people that I've talked to that I've seen it, they're very impressed. And, I was very surprised when we were making it, the sheer lack of knowledge about coral reefs in general, just not knowing, you know, if they're a plant, an animal, what they are, where they are. So I think, you know, at a base level, we're just increasing education about what these, you know, important and diverse ecosystems are, and hopefully raising awareness about, you know, how human impacts are causing them to be destroyed.
You know, your art definitely has raised awareness about keeping plastic out of the oceans. Do you think it's actually inspired people to reconsider how they dispose of plastics or how they use plastics in their everyday activities?
I hope so. I know that for me, it definitely has. I'm definitely more aware, even from before I started the project, that I need to be a little more conscious. But I think especially in terms of lab materials, there's definitely a lot of, I don't know, I guess, who you go through, but there's just so much that can be improved on, you know, the sustainability of lab materials and lab products. And I didn't realize how much waste was produced just through trying to do scientific research. It's kind of a paradox because, you know, we work in a coral reef lab to try and protect coral reef ecosystems, but we produce so much waste that we're really contributing to the problem also.
What was the biggest lesson you learned, and what was the takeaway from creating this project?
I think the biggest lesson I learned, I guess, is I've always been a very, I guess twofold, actually. I'm a very math science person, and I never considered myself, you know, anything of an artist. And I think for me, at least on a personal level, it showed me that you can do things that at first you, you know, had no conceived reality that it was possible for you. But on a more broad scale, I think the overall idea that visual displays and art and things that you wouldn't necessarily associate with science or math or engineering can really have a big impact on how it's perceived by other people.
Well, it's good to know that you're a senior, so that means that you're getting close to graduation. What do you hope to pursue once you're out of school?
So I'm actually planning to go to medical school. And my goal is hopefully in the future, I'd like to work in like sustainable medicine. So figuring out how we can maximize the benefits of medical technology while minimizing the cost, especially in like third world countries where resources might be limited. I think like sustainability and third world development are intrinsically linked together.
Well, that sounds like an admirable pursuit. Would you continue working in the sustainability realm or with coral reefs in your spare time?
Yeah, I think I definitely plan to, you know, keep up. I mean, I won't be able to keep doing my research because I'll be moving away, but I definitely, you know, plan to keep up with sustainability practices, you know, hopefully work on future sustainability projects in a variety of other fields. And I definitely will always be passionate about coral reefs. It's just something that has been such an integral part of my college experience, and I don't think it's anything that I'll ever be able to just toss away.
In closing, any sage words of wisdom you want to pass along to our listeners?
I'm a 21-year-old. I don't know if I have any sage words.
Well, maybe we'll just let your actions speak for themselves. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That's Jones College senior Alex Rovner talking about Not Correlated, which is now on display at the Moody Center for the Arts at Rice University. I'm Robert Colangelo, and you're listening to Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
recently talked about the 49th annual Earth Day, but this year is a first. It's the first Drive Electric Earth Day, which is a national campaign to share information about EVs. We're joined by Drive Electric Earth Day Executive Director, Joel Levin. Joel, welcome to Green Sense. How are you integrating EVs into Earth Day events around the country?
So I should start by telling you that we've, for the last 8 years, had a different national campaign of electric vehicle events called National Drive Electric Week, which is every fall. And it has really been hugely successful. Last year we had more than 300 events in every state in the country. And there was a demand by people to do more. People wanted to have events in other parts of the year as well. So we decided to expand it and also have a campaign in the spring around Earth Day.
So what happened at these Drive Electric events?
The purpose of the events is really to let people who are interested in electric cars experience the cars directly and talk to drivers of electric cars directly. We found that there's a lot of misconceptions in the world about EVs, but that if people have a chance to drive one of the cars or be a passenger in one, and then to have a real conversation with someone who's an actual driver of it, all those misconceptions fall away and people realize that they're really great cars. The cars really sell themselves if you give them a chance.
Tell us maybe the top two or three misconceptions out there that are dispelled by actually getting in an EV.
Well, you know, the number one thing that we hear from people who've never been in an EV, they say, yeah, I don't think I'd ever drive one because I need a car with more power, which is hilarious because when people who drive EVs and you ask them what do they like about their car, they say, I love the power, you know, because EVs have maximum torque from a standstill. They take off rapidly. They have smooth, quiet acceleration that gas cars just can't match. And that's just always a big surprise for people who've never driven them before. So I would say that is number one, just they're fun to drive, the performance. Second is that you don't realize what a pleasure it is not buying gas until you've been doing it for a couple months and you're driving past those gas stations and you've sort of lost track of the price of gas. And then probably the third thing is the maintenance. They're very low maintenance. Most of the scheduled maintenance you have on a gas car, you don't have with an EV because they just don't have a lot of moving parts. At its core, an electric vehicle is just a big battery, an electric motor, and a set of wheels. And so all those other systems that you have in a gas car, you don't have. So they're just very low maintenance, and that's really a pleasure.
What about charge anxiety? I would think that new drivers of electric cars would be very anxious when it comes to lower charge and being able to charge a car quickly. How do you address that?
You know, what we found is that the people who are worried about range and charging are people who don't drive electric cars. People who drive them, if you pick the right car for your lifestyle, so you have to think really seriously about getting a car that fits your needs, depending on, you know, how long your commute is, where you're going to charge it, how often you go on long trips, things like that. If you get the right car, charging and range are not going to be a problem. But well, ask anybody with an electric car, you know, generally it's not a problem. You figure out how to make it work.
What about charging stations? Have they become more available? So has that reduced some of the charge anxiety?
Well, most people charge at home. The vast majority of charging happens at home or at work. And public charging is still an issue. It's growing out there. We need more public charging. But most people generally charge at their home or work. And so it's less of an issue than you'd think. It's not, you need to think of a different model of fueling your car. It's not like going to the gas station every week or twice a week. It's a little bit more like charging your cell phone. You think about how do you charge your cell phone? Generally, it's at home while you're sleeping or at work while you're sitting at your desk. And that's more the model of how people charge an EV typically. And public charging is kind of it's more of a backup. It's more kind of insurance when you do something unusual.
Well, thanks to our reoccurring guest, Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, we get a wide variety of vehicles we can test drive on the show. and we've test driven several EVs here on GreenSense. What's the most exciting development that you've seen in the last 2 to 3 years when it comes to EVs?
Well, the big change is the development of all the longer range vehicles that are 200 miles plus, 200 and 250 miles. There's starting to be a lot of them. I think there's 7 on the market right now, and there's probably another 5 that are coming out before the end of the year. So there's really quite a selection of 200 mile plus vehicles, and we think that's going to make a huge difference. That's really a reflection of battery technology getting cheaper and more sophisticated, that manufacturers are able to have much longer ranges without the prices going up.
The media has really caught or Rivian has caught the eye of the media, the electric pickup truck. And I've often wondered, why didn't they start with electric pickup trucks? You have a lot more space. You can have bigger battery capacity, and that's estimated to get 400 miles to the charge. What are your thoughts on electric pickup trucks, and how is that going to impact the EV market?
Oh, I'm really excited about Rivian, and there's a number of other companies working on them as well. I think the electric pickup truck is going to be a very big deal. I mean, Rivian is trying to position itself as sort of like the Tesla for pickup trucks, you know, the one that everyone's really going to want. You know, the challenge with pickup trucks is that they're big, you know, heavy vehicles, and so back when batteries were really expensive, it was price prohibitive to have an electric pickup truck. They would have been too expensive, but that's not true anymore. And, you know, as you know, a lot of Americans drive pickup trucks. There's big parts of the country where that's the primary vehicle that people get around in. And so if you want EVs to be broadly accepted and broadly usable, you need a pickup truck. It's really core. If you look at the top probably 3 or so selling vehicles in the United States, they're all pickup trucks. So I think it's going to be a really big development in the market once we have a selection of electric pickup trucks. And another, give us about 2 years, and I think you're going to see that with Rivian and a couple of others as well.
Yes, we're pretty excited about it, and the car looks great, and we wish them best of luck getting off the ground, because it's good to get press when you're a new company, but the key is to be able to manufacture those consistently and have great quality. Let's take a step up. What about electric semis?
Well, there's a number of, basically all the big semi manufacturers are working on them. And as you know, Tesla has set the bar. They are taking orders on their electric semi. It's hopefully going to be out another year or two. I don't know when they're hedging on their date for it, but they've sort of thrown down the challenge to the other manufacturers. And so those are coming as well. I think that initially, they will not be like vehicles that you take cross country. They'll more be for short haul that would go, like, let's say between like a port and a warehouse, maybe a couple hundred miles round trip. I think that's where the sweet spot will be for them initially. And, you know, I think it'll be longer term when you can take a semi from California to New York.
It's nice to see how they're permeating society with all these different levels of electric vehicles. Right now, electric vehicles are a very small percentage. Do you have any projections of what percentage of cars on the road you'd like to see be EVs in the coming years?
Yes. Well, right now, it is a very small percentage. EV sales in the U.S. are around 2% of total car sales, and the actual cars on the road, it's well under 1%. We'd like to see all of them. You know, we think that within a few years we could get up to 5%, and we'd like to see by 2040 that all new car sales in the U.S. are electric, and we think that's achievable at the very rapid pace that the technology is developing and the market is developing. There's already models for that. I mean, if you look at kind of Norway as kind of the extreme case, where now more than half of all new cars sold in Norway are electric. So we think it's achievable to get to 100% EVs in the U.S. eventually.
What's the biggest myth about EVs you'd like to dispel?
The biggest myth is that EVs are kind of like broccoli, that they're sort of good for you, not that pleasant. You got to do it because it's the right thing to do. You just got to sort of suck it up and get one, even though it's maybe not much fun. In fact, people who drive EVs love their cars. They love their cars, and not just because they're good for the environment. They love them because they're fun to drive. They're cheaper in terms of fueling and maintenance, and they just have better performance. And, you know, people love the cars. It's not like something painful. That's the kind of big surprise to people that have not been exposed to EVs.
Joel, thanks for joining us on GreenSense.
Sure, it's been my pleasure.
That's Joel Levin, Executive Director of Plug-in America. You can find more about it at driveelectricearthday.org. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is GreenSense. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. We hope you enjoyed this edition of GreenSense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. All you have to do is stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.